Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th of February, Anno Domini 2013, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, and thanks to all of those who paid their dues. Here we go. We'll start with the news. Satya Nadella, the quiet and self-effacing Microsoft's enterprise chief, prevailed over much splashier outside candidates and was named CEO of the software giant Tuesday. He is only the third CEO since the company's founding, replacing Steve Ballmer. The first Microsoft CEO, of course, was co-founder and chairman Bill Gates. As part of the changes at the top, and perhaps even more significantly, at least from a symbolic perspective, Gates will be shedding his chairman role at the company to be replaced by director John Thompson, former CEO of Symantec. Instead, Gates will be spending more time helping Nadella, especially in the technology and product area, with the title of technology advisor, working full-time several days a week at Microsoft. But he still owns a 4% stake in Microsoft and will remain a powerful director. Gates will also continue to be deeply involved in his philanthropic efforts via the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Among the major issues to deal with, mobile, shifts to the cloud in the enterprise space, and how to move a huge behemoth that is Microsoft more quickly to better compete with more nimble rivals such as Google. Indeed, much has changed since Gates stepped away from Microsoft. His more active role brings him back to the company on a daily basis, 6 years after he changed the roles. Even so, he has remained a potent and emotional icon to employees. They are in dire need of inspiration after a bruising restructuring that was soon followed by the long and chaotic search for a CEO. The news of the appointment was widely expected, coming almost 6 months after Ballmer said he was stepping down from the post. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Satya Nadella is Microsoft's new CEO. And your choices are, I hope he's great, well, he can't be worse, bring back Bill, and oh, Steve, we hardly knew you. And so far, that's the one that's winning with 46% of the vote.
Developers!
You know, it's pretty nice, though. You can just step in, create a role, and give yourself a title.
Well, you know, when you're when you're that guy.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Very few can do that. Well, I'm going to create this position, and here's my title.
Yep.
And here's what you'll pay me.
Yep. And that's the big thing, yes. And I'll come in a couple of days a week. And
yeah, maybe.
Time, don't call
maybe.
Me.
I might be working from home. I have the technology. I may use it.
Right. And, of course, I know you'll have more to say on this. So you can join us in the forums. Look for 8Feb14. Satya Nadella is Microsoft's new CEO. And, of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll see this week, by the way, we'll go back to that topic in a moment, but we will see this week whether or not I have fixed my problem with the Hangouts. One thing is
you haven't been cursing at it all along yet,
right? Well, one of the things, of course, is that
and the show just started though.
Machine. This is not. This is a very old machine with. It's just slow and old. But the other thing is, I realized I was not. Yeah, it's a lot like a. Not quite as old, not quite as slow, but yeah.
Speak for yourself.
No, I'm saying the computer's not quite as old, not quite as slow.
Thank you.
Yeah. But what I realized was, we're in such a hurry to get out of here, too, because there's another show coming on.
Right.
And, George has to set up. We have to leave. I just close my laptop and go. And that's not properly logging me out of Google. So I don't use this machine much during the week, and any week that I don't use it at all,
oops,
when I bring it back up again, it's old credentials. They work for a while, and then Google says, yeah, I don't think so anymore. And that's what's been happening, and I think we now have that issue solved. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Jack from Exton, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Jack.
Actually, it's Dick. But
Dick from Exton,
morning.
PA.
I heard you guys praising the Chromebook, and I went and bought an Acer Chromebook. And it's working great, but I'm having a couple problems that maybe you can help me with.
Sure.
I hooked up an external VGA monitor, and the monitor only shows the desktop. No matter what I have on the screen of the computer, the monitor just shows the desktop.
Yep.
It's in second monitor mode, so each monitor can have its own items on it. So you put one group of windows on one monitor, one group of windows on the other monitor. You want to turn on a feature called mirroring, so you see both monitors have the same image.
How do I turn that on?
You got to go into the display
settings. In the lower right corner, next to the little thing you always see that has your picture and the battery and all that stuff.
Right.
Next to that should be a little square box that says probably just the number one.
No, I don't have that.
Okay.
Hey, let's go into the control panel then display settings.
No, he's on Chrome, not Windows.
Yeah, but don't they still go into a display setting?
It's not at all the same.
Oh, really?
I'm seeing several reports in the Google forums that if you hit Control F4, that will switch between mirroring and spanning. A lot of PCs, in fact, probably most PCs, have a little icon on their keyboard that looks like a video screen. If you know what you're looking for, it looks like a video screen. And that will switch the computer from internal monitor to external monitor or both.
Yeah. Okay, I did Control F4 and that worked.
Yep.
There you
go. So that turns mirroring on. Yeah.
I got another question for you. I'm trying to listen to a M3U stream, and it won't play it.
What happens when you try?
It comes up with a thing that I have to go to the Google Apps.
Yeah, you need an app.
Apps. I don't see anything that would apply to that.
There are a half a dozen things that will play that. Is this a radio stream or a... Or what kind of stream is this?
It's a radio stream, basically.
Okay.
It's an internet-only radio stream.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
On Mac or Windows, you could use Winamp or iTunes to play
right.
that.
Right, and I'm
seeing one called Radio Player Live in the Chrome Web Store.
That's the one I was going to talk about.
The Radio Player Live.
Right, Radio Player Live is an add-on for your system. And what it does is it sits up in the corner of your screen just to the right of the URL bar, the little place where you type in websites.
Okay.
And it sits there, and when you open it, you can pick any one of a million streams or, of course, add your own.
Okay.
That's just one of a dozen programs that will do what you want to do. Actually, if you search the Google Play Store for M3U, you will find a couple of dozen apps.
Oh, okay.
That have something to do with that. There's the M3U player. There's Power Amp, HD Video, IPTV, Audio Player, blah 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 blah. So you can try, and the vast majority of them are, of course, free. So you can try them all if you like.
And a neat thing about the Radio Player Live is it does let you listen to other radio stations around the world.
Okay.
And in point of fact, I listen to a little station I like to call Jazz 90.1 all the time on my Chromebook through Radio Live.
Yep.
Okay, good. Now I got one more question.
All right.
How do I add an icon to the desktop? I try this thing of putting the thing right before the URL, drag and drop. It doesn't work.
You don't add things to the desktop. You add them as apps to the system, and then you can drop them down at the bottom along the what on Windows would be the tray.
Yeah,
taskbar.
The taskbar. And the way you do that is you, in the far lower left, is the apps list.
Right.
You open that up. Right-click, and say pin to, they don't call it the taskbar. I forget what they call it.
The launcher?
Maybe.
Select pin to launcher, yeah.
So pin to launcher. There you go. Mm-hmm. And then it will appear down there.
Oh, okay.
Here's the other little tip. I think it's control 1 through 8 will automatically run the first 8 things on that list.
Short, or, so on, shortcut
on the,
keys.
On the, you're right, on the bottom, on the launcher. So the leftmost one, not counting apps, is number 1. Control 2 will play the second one, will start the second one. Control 3 will start the third one. Control 9 will always start the one to the far right, no matter what number it is.
Okay. All right. I appreciate the help because so far I like the Chromebook. It seems nice. And I'm glad you helped me on that. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay. You have a good day.
You too. Keep smiling.
Now, the Chromebooks
and listen
are
to us on the stream on Radio Live, Radio Player Live.
Yep. And the Chromebooks are relatively inexpensive, too, correct?
Anywhere from a couple of $100 up to, well,
no,
you
the
can
Chromebook
buy a Pixel.
Pixel
for $1,500, but yeah, generally between $200 and $350, yeah, depending on what model you buy.
Hmm.
Might
have to get one just to play with.
Yeah, this won't help Dick much, but for the rest of us in Rochester, for those of us in Rochester, the first Thursday of every month, which was a couple nights ago, we meet at St. John's Meadow, the Rochester Googles group, and we talk about all kinds of Google things, including the Chromebook. Several of us there have Chromebooks. If you're interested in seeing one and getting your hands on one to see if it's something you're interested in, you can do that. And, of course, the easiest way to know if a Chromebook will work for you as a second computer or whatever is to just run the Chrome browser. Everything you can do on a Chromebook, you can also do in the Chrome browser. Once you add all the apps and stuff like that, so you can tell whether or not it's something you want to do. I use mine all the time. I have a big computer at home, a big, beautiful Linux box at home. And when I'm out traveling, I take the Chromebook because, A, it has a 9-hour battery life, and, B, if I do lose it, I'm out a couple of $100.
Yep.
And I lose no documents or anything. If you want to try to break into it, you have to guess my password. That's going to take you a very, very, very long time. And even if you do
not
get
in this
into
lifetime.
It, even if you do get into it, you're not going to find anything because everything's up on the cloud. I lose no documents. Nobody can mm-hmm. steal my documents. None of that stuff. So all I need to do is spend another couple of $100, buy a new one, put in my username and password,
and it
I'm
remembers
back up
you.
Just like the day I lost yep. it. It is the most amazing thing. And I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but I was talking to a guy on Google Plus who has a Chromebook, and we were talking about various thises and thats. And he said, I had the weirdest experience the other day. I turned on my Chromebook, and I got a message. Again, he's a typical user, so he didn't memorize the message. But he said it was something about the ROMs were corrupted, and it wouldn't boot. And I just sat there staring at the screen because I've never seen anything like this. All of a sudden, it said, repairing, reburning ROMs from the network. And it apparently went out to the internet somewhere in Google land, pulled down the ROM image, burned it back into the ROMs, rebooted, everything was fine.
That's pretty cool.
And that just sort of leaves you there with your jaw hanging.
Your jaw is hanging.
Yeah.
I now want more of these. I'm giving these to every single person who ever calls me for computer advice. Here, just take this and shut up. If it's not working, wait 5 minutes, and it will repair itself.
Maybe that's what I should have gotten for Kathy.
Wow. Oh.
Her laptop died last week.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, but I need this, I need the information on that. Well, I can get that back.
Yeah.
But I wound up putting together another system for her, but this would even be better.
I'll tell you what, depending on things, because my Chromebook is $350 because I bought the high-end HP 14-inch Chromebook. Mm-hmm. Because my eyes are too old for an 11-inch laptop anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That just is the way it is. Toshiba has a 13-inch. HP has the 14-inch. I went for the 14. I'm looking at the 13. But even so, it was inexpensive. The battery lasts 9 freaking hours, thank you very much. It's got 4 gig of RAM. It's ridiculously fast. So I'm very happy with it, absolutely.
And I should make a mention that whoever's running the Rochester Google's website, your domain name has expired and it doesn't work anymore.
We've never had a domain name. How interesting.
Well, rochestergoogles.com is on the G-Plus account. It's on the Netflix accounts, but there's nothing there.
All righty. Well, we'll look into that. Absolutely. Maybe Jerry's listening. He can see about getting it for us, and we'll get it up. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. Oh, and we have Carl on the line. Stay on the line, Carl. We'll get to you. It's the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Carl from Pottstown, PA on the line. So far, it's Pennsylvania Day at Soundbites. How are you, Carl? What's up?
I'm fine. How are you?
Peachy.
I'm having a little trouble getting to a path in Windows 7, Windows 7 Pro. I have a scanner, an HP scanner. And it's a double printer scanner type thing. And I put a picture on the scanner and scan it in and bring up the HP software to do the scan. It scans it in as a JPEG image. It tells me where the save location for that image will be. It tells me the save location will be C, user, Carl, pictures, my scans. Now, notice I didn't say my pictures. I just said pictures. Users, Carl, pictures, my scans. And then there's a little box I could check that says, launch Windows Explorer in the save location after saving the file. So I click OK, and it goes to its scan. And it scans successfully in. And after it's in, after the scan is in, and I click Finish, it definitely goes to C, users, Carl, pictures, my scans, and a screen comes up where I have a thumbnail of the image I just scanned. All right, everything's okay so far. However, when I try to find that path independently by clicking on Start, my computer, or just computer in this case, local disk C, and then subfolder users, which takes me to a list of other subfolders, and I pick the subfolder Carl, which takes me to a list of other subfolders, and next should be the subfolder pictures. Well, there is no pictures in this list of subfolders. There's the closest it comes is my pictures, but that's not the correct subfolder.
It's probably invisible.
It's invisible. I want to know how to make it visible.
Control panel, appearance. Well, I can post a link too. Two things. You can make the folder visible in the control panel under appearance and personalization. And my mic just went nuts again. Rob, if you're listening. Or you should be able to change the path in the HP software to be able to save it into My Pictures instead of just Pictures.
Right. I would like to make all of the... I don't know how many of these subfolders are invisible. That's the one I found, but there may be others that are invisible, too. I'd like to make everything visible if I can.
Well, yeah. You don't want everything to be visible because that leads to trouble. For example, there are some system folders that you really don't ever want to mess with.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to make those visible because... just like all of us, at some point you will be tempted to just go muck about in them because you can. Mm. Out of sight, out of mind. But to see any hidden folders, use the dir command followed by a space.
At a command prompt.
Right, at a command prompt. You can say dir space /AD. So the /A is for attributes. D would be for directories. You want H for hidden files. So it's dir space /AH.
Once you turn on the invisible folder to see the invisibles, you should be able to do a properties on it and make it not invisible. Or hidden is the Windows term they use, too. What probably happened is the first time the scanner software created a file in Pictures, it made that directory rather than in My Pictures. So it's somehow made it invisible for some reason.
Hmm.
So you should you can make all your files visible with the control panel, and then find that one folder, make it visible, and then hide the other files that are supposed to be hidden. And then either keep using that pictures folder or change the HP software to save it in My Pictures. There should be a way to change the destination folder.
Right. So if I pursue the path of trying to make that one folder visible, you said I could go to Appearance and Personalization under Control Panel.
Right.
And then when I do that, it gives me a lot of different options to choose from. Which one should I pick? Folder options?
Folder
options. Show hidden files and folders?
Yep. Folder options, view, advanced, and show hidden.
Okay, I'll try that.
But you've looked in pictures and you don't see my scanner. My scans.
Yeah, he can see it when the HP software opens it for him.
No, right. When you go to it directly, if you open
He can't get to it directly.
If you open My Pictures, you don't see my scans. Is that correct?
Let me try one more time just to be sure. If I open My Pictures, wait a minute. No, there are some pictures in here, but I do see my scans. Yes, I do.
Then if you open that, do you see your scans?
So he's got pictures and scans, and he's got My Pictures and scans.
Actually, I do. When I open that, I do see
what's happened is, although it says it's sending it to pictures, that's just another name for My Pictures, and so they are, in fact, the same folder.
So the path, the path that you never care about in Windows is actually pictures. And the desktop shows you My Pictures.
Well, it's like anything. You can create a pointer to a file.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And somewhere they've created a pointer called Pictures to the My Pictures folder.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I think this is solved now. Thank you very much.
There you go.
Okay. Take care.
Have a good one.
Because My Pictures shows up as a convenience. You get My Documents, My Pictures, My Movies as in the library section of the window.
Right.
And the actual path name is probably just pictures.
Right, exactly.
Because there's your pictures, and then there's pictures from the other users, and then there's pictures from the shared users.
Right.
That all sort of muck about in there, too.
Right. Right. So it was just a naming confusion. All right. Let's come back to at least New York State and talk to Dave from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
How you doing, guys? I used to use Outlook to manage my Roadrunner email account, but they changed things, and you can no longer, delete email. You have to go onto their web page.
Right.
And it's very slow and a double-step process. Is there any software that will allow you to manage the email?
You can tell your Outlook program to delete the email when it downloads it from Roadrunner or several days later. There's a setting in Outlook and an email program to do that.
Okay.
Usually it's in advanced tools or mail tools. Let me see if we can find it here. But one of the problems with Roadrunner is they only support POP email. So you cannot manage the mail.
Okay.
So when your computer downloads mail, you can tell your mail program to leave it on the server so you can see it on another device. Because a lot of people will have a tablet, a desktop, a phone, and they want to see the mail on each device. The problem is you delete it on one device, it doesn't do anything to the other devices, because that's the way POP works. Virtually every other mail system supports IMAP, which means you delete it on one device, it does delete it from all your other devices as well. What we've been telling a lot of people to do is make a Google account or Apple iCloud account if you're doing a lot with iDevices, and then tell that account to pick up your Roadrunner mail so you can still give people your Roadrunner address. But you can do all your mail managing with the Google account over IMAP.
Well, the only problem I have with the Google Mail is the mail comes in kind of batches, so things are nested inside, so if you get replies, and sometimes I miss those.
Well, that's a feature you can turn on or off. That's conversation threads. What it tries to do is group all of the mail with the same subject into one conversation.
So I could change that and get it to come up so I could see each response.
Yeah, you want to turn off conversations.
Okay. Well, that's been very helpful. Thank you, guys.
Yep. And I'm posting a link on how to tell Outlook to remove POP mail from the server.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah, we get the question a lot with tablets and smartphones and computers, you know, because all the junk mail I deleted on my phone comes in on the computer, too.
Right.
Yes, that's the way POP works. There's nothing you can do about it except don't use POP.
POP, which stands for Post Office Protocol, is basically designed, was the original design for mail. And in those days, computers didn't, servers didn't have a lot of storage for people. So they were designed that you took the mail off of their server.
You dialed in
your computer, and it was erased from that server.
Right. You dialed in with your modem, downloaded all your mail, and hung up as soon as you could because you paid by the minute for access.
Right. And that was great until IMAP came along and the internet messaging and something.
Access protocol?
Maybe.
Yeah.
And it allowed you to keep the mail on the server so that multiple devices could see it simultaneously. So POP did a hack. It left the mail on the server so another device could also download it, but now they're out of sync because there's no synchronization between the two. In IMAP, all the mail always lives on the server, so no matter where you see it, you're seeing the same mail. You delete it from one place, it actually deletes it on the server,
it's gone.
So the other place doesn't see it either.
The other problem we run into with Roadrunner is they only give you 100 megabytes of mail space. Right. It used to be 10 megs, which you could blow in two messages if someone sends you a picture. So 100 megabytes of mail space is virtually nothing. Google gives you 15,000 megabytes.
Right.
So people with Roadrunner that either get a lot of pictures, which take up that space, or say you're out of town for a few days, you'll start getting email messages that your mailbox is full and you need to delete your mail. That does not mean the mail on your computer, because people call us up and they say, I deleted all the mail from my computer and it still says my mailbox is full. It's not the mail on your computer, it's the mail at Roadrunner. And you have to tell your computer to delete it from Roadrunner, or you log into Roadrunner's webmail service and delete it manually. But as the caller said, Roadrunner's webmail service is horribly slow.
So that's why you say people should use Gmail and forward all their mail off of
Roadrunner.
Or have Gmail pick it up from Roadrunner.
Yeah, either pick up or push it from Roadrunner.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
That way you can use IMAP to manage your mail but still keep your Roadrunner email address.
Right.
And then that goes back to the problem people have of switching mail providers. If you want to switch your internet provider, you lose your email address. A lot of people will get an email address like Google or iCloud or Yahoo that's not tied to an internet provider. So you can switch internet providers and keep your same email address, which is very handy. I know a lot of people are still using an AOL email address because that's what I had 20 years ago, and everyone
right.
knows it.
Right.
At least it's not AOL.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I've forgotten my AOL address.
You remember
address,
all the discs and CDs that we used
yep.
to get?
Oh, man, they were the best. They were the best.
Floppies before that. I never had to buy floppies.
Yeah. Oh, I had tons. The only reason I brought it up, because I was downstairs working on one of the computers. I had to go through the I still have a drawer full of floppies. I even have 720s.
Nice.
Ooh.
Well, I used to see.
And I came across an old AOL disc, and it's like, whoa, what a blast from the past.
You're no kidding. I have the original Excel in a box with the floppies.
Whoa.
They're probably 360K floppies, too.
Yeah.
I've never opened it. It's still
not the 1.2.
You're right, right. I know people who used to make sculptures out of the AOL CDs. Because sadly, while you could reformat the floppies and use them, they didn't send out CDRs or CDRWs. They just sent out CDs.
CDRs.
Yeah.
And you could create coasters.
And we used them for coasters. But I've seen people who made mail for chain mail for LARPing out of them. All kinds of fun stuff. But you can't really use them for much of anything else. Oh, well, it is what it is, I guess.
Well, that's the thing. And we've, you know, come so far in such a short time. You were sitting there saying how you've forgotten acronyms. Acronyms are, shorter. But there's so many nowadays that we use, it's easy to forget the old ones.
Yep. I used to run an acronym server. I should set that back up again. That would be kind of fun. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We have Vic on the line, too, so stay on the line, Vic. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have the very patient Vic from Irondequoit on the line. Hiya, Vic. What's up?
Hi, guys. I got two questions. First one is, are there any benefits to getting a Category 7 Ethernet cable versus the standard Category 5?
I believe Cat 6 and 7 are more flame retardant, fire resistant, however you want to put that. But beyond that, and they certainly are rated for higher speeds. So if, for example, at a later point, you decide to get a higher speed internet connection like Greenlight or whatever, you know, if you go up to a gigabyte,
Cat 5 is one gigabit. Yeah. Cat 6 is 10 gigabit.
Right.
So that's, you know, years down the road.
So other than shielding and flame retardants, no, not for the level we work at.
Okay, next or last question is, my Firefox version is 27, and when I clicked on it to see to find that version, it says it's updating from another source. What would that source be?
I don't know that I would necessarily trust that other source.
Are you in the beta channel?
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask.
No, I just regularly clicked on the Firefox icon, and something I do all the time, and I always check, even though I've got the box checked, you know, update automatically, I always check it manually, and for some reason this morning it said updating from another channel, another source, and I didn't understand what that meant.
What it sounds like is the computer system that Firefox normally uses, you know, it goes out to the internet, it goes out to a system somewhere in the Mozilla world, and downloads the latest release. And what it sounds like is happening is that server is unreachable, and so it is using a different server.
So I really can't get the next version if there is one? Is 27 the latest one, or is it 27.1 or 2 or anything like that?
We're both frantically looking.
Latest Firefox version would be... Here we go, latest Firefox update. Hold on.
It just says download. It doesn't say what version it is.
Yeah, it doesn't say so. Firefox 27, but it is 27.
Okay, yeah, that's what I have right now.
Yeah. So if you go to... Well, that's interesting. If you go to... you're right. If you go to the Firefox website, it doesn't tell you. But if you look at the download title name, it is 27.0.
Okay.
There is a beta channel you can be part of so that you get the beta versions that come out before they're actually released. It should tell you that in the Firefox about window if you're in the beta channel or not.
I'm not.
Right. So what it does sound like is that it simply couldn't reach the original... and is now just telling you that when it does its updates, it does them from an alternate source. It may also be because a couple of others do this. Google's Chrome does it, a couple of others. It looks to find the closest, well, the fastest download, and downloads from there. So it may have changed the channel on you that way, too.
So I really have no control over that, correct?
Not really, no. There may be something you can change in it that you can that in Firefox you can set update channel, or rather the update server. But
Yeah, I don't see one.
You can, and Steve can post a link to it, and that's for apparently setting up your own, which is an interesting. Oh no, here we go. It's an XML file, and you just go in and put the URL you want in it. Of course, that begs the question: what would that URL be?
Yeah. Well, I could see like a big company doesn't want all of their desktops downloading it from the internet, so they have their own internal update server, and each computer would download it from internally instead of externally.
Right. RIT does that. They download. What they do is they download the next version, and then they make sure it's good and clean and et cetera, before they post it to their update servers. But
yeah, if you go to about:config, if I can spell config right, there is a parameter called app.update.channel, and you can see what that is. Let me see what it is on mine. App.update.channel. It's a string.
Good to know.
Good to know. The value is release. So I'm on the release channel. So it should say release if you're on the regular release channel.
Right, but that doesn't say anything about which server he's on.
Right.
I believe that's automated in the background.
In the background, yeah.
Yeah.
But at least it will tell you if you're not on the release channel and there's something else that your computer's trying to do.
Well, then I could actually at some point just keep going to the Mozilla site and just keep downloading Firefox or Firefox. At some point, I'm going to get an update, right?
Exactly.
And okay, I won't be hurt by doing that, right?
No, keep looking. It's not an issue.
Yeah, because every now and then, I don't remember what site it is. It'll say something. Maybe it's Windows Secrets or something. I think I subscribe to it. It'll mention the new Firefox update, and I'll check mine, and it isn't that one. So I'll just go to the Firefox.
Well, just because it's out doesn't mean you've gotten it yet.
Yeah.
You know, it can be days before you get it.
And Windows Secrets may be talking about the new beta version, too.
Right.
Okay.
You have to be very careful about what they're actually talking about.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, it's an issue that we all have. We all want to be on the latest and greatest, but sometimes the latest and greatest has issues.
Right.
So, for example, on my Linux box at home, I'm on the beta channel for Google Chrome, which means every once in a while the menus get a little wonky. And things just work oddly for a day or so until they fix that.
Yep.
And then we're good to go again. We've got time, I'm pretty sure, for Ray from Webster, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
A very quick, easy one for Steve, probably. I'm running iMac 10.6.8. And all week long, I've had this issue where the menu bar goes black on me. Everything else is fine. But if I shut down and restart, then the menu bar will, you know, show again.
So it goes black and stays black?
It's black and stays black, but I can put the pointer up in there and click, and whatever area I have it in, whether it's, you know, type or object or file, whatever, the pull-down menu shows. But when the cursor is anywhere else on the screen, that whole menu bar is a black bar.
Sounds like a video bug. Do you have translucent menu bar turned on?
I have no idea.
There's a feature in System Preferences where your menu bar can be translucent so you can see your desktop picture through the menu bar.
Hold on.
It's kind of silly, but it's there.
It's a Mac.
Yeah. Sometimes
Windows does it. Arrow does it.
Yeah, there's too many. If that little bit of the menu bar blocks the piece of the picture you want to see, change your picture.
No, yeah, really.
I just, you know, like to know, you know, if I want to go to, you know, in the program, go to object and down to,
yeah,
you know, fitting or something. I like to just see it a little quicker.
Yep.
I never had this before. It's just been all this week.
Yeah, I've seen it occasionally. There is a feature that if your volume is set to zero, the menu bar blinks black and then back to white instead of a system beep because the volume is zero. And that's in the accessibility listings for people with hearing impairments where you couldn't hear the beep. But if it goes black and stays black, that's definitely something wrong somewhere. So it may be a combination of the accessibility settings and the translucent menu bar. I'm seeing a few things in the forums about repairing your directory and permission. So in Disk Utility, there's the Disk First Aid tab to repair your file permissions.
Man, I thought it was going to be some stupid key I was hitting, and you know, I could just turn it back on. Well,
not if it
I
goes
guess
back
I got to live
stays.
With what I got, huh?
Well, it does mean there's something wrong somewhere. So it's trying to figure out what is wrong and where. There are some terminal commands that you can enter to change your colors. So it reverses the menu bar. So instead of black text on white, it's white text on black. But that would be something you would have to type yourself into the terminal. Or one of the GUI apps that do it. Do you have people in the house that like to do practical jokes?
No. There's just my wife and I, and I'm the joker. She's she's the straight one.
So are you sleep joking on yourself?
Yeah, or she's learned something that he doesn't know yet, and
that's
she's
right.
being very coy about it.
Well, anyways, I just but it's funny if I shut the computer down, not just restart, but if I shut it down and then 3 or 4 minutes later start it, then the menu bar is normal.
Try logging out instead of shutting down. Just log out of your account and then log back into it and see if that works. It may be a corrupt preference file somewhere, and by rebooting, it brings it back until it corrupts again.
Well, let me ask another question. You say if you restart it, it comes back fine.
If I not restart, but if I shut down.
Uh-huh. So if you only restart, if you only restart, it's still bad.
I believe that's, you know, how it's been. Right now I'm doing that just to see what
if that's happen. The case, then I've got to say it's more likely to be something like overheating of the card.
Something in the video
that's
card
sort of
or
fair
video
because,
RAM.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You might want to try reseating your memory cards.
So turn the machine off first.
Turn the machine off, let it cool down a little bit, pull the memory cards out, and then push them back in so they're nice and tight.
I don't even know where to access them.
On the iMac, they're under the bottom of the screen. There's a little there's a little access door.
Oh, okay.
And what we also see over time is heating and cooling cycles will lift those little cards out of the sockets. Especially on the iMac, gravity helps pull them down because there's sockets that go up into the computer. And if the memory cards are slightly loose or slightly crooked, that can do weird things.
The Mac uses system memory for video?
Some of the models do, yeah.
And they just slowly walk themselves out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Little by little, each time the heat. In the cold.
Apple has always had that trouble.
Yeah, remember your story?
I'm learning so much that I never wanted to know.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yep. Yeah,
okay,
I used
let me play.
All right, have fun.
Do some good work.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem with any socketed connector like that. The heating and cooling cycles, the metal pins expand and contract, and they can wiggle their way loose.
It used to be that back in the days of the Apple III, we got in our first batch of Apple IIIs, and they were all, none of them would start, not a one. So I called up Apple Tech Support, and they said, "Oh, are you standing in front of the Apple III?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Lift the front," because it was an all-in-one machine. He said, "Lift up the keyboard." I said, "Yeah," and I'm bending down to look underneath it. He says, "Let go." He said, "What?" He said, "Let go." So I let go. It slammed back down. He said, "Turn it on." Worked perfectly. I said, "What the hell?" He said, "And we're discovering that in transit, the RAM cards are walking out of the sockets."
Yep.
So with all your machines, you generally speaking, just slam them back down, it'll work, or you can open them up and poke them down by hand.
That feels better.
Which is, yeah, what I actually ended up doing. Yeah, exactly. But so clearly, RAM chip problems, RAM chips walking is a long-standing Apple tradition, actually. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But we're all going to do it all again on the other side of the hour, so don't go too far. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and, of course, all of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. With more sound bites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of this week's Sound Bites. And we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Dennis?
Well, this is for Steve. I'm in the middle of using maps on my iPhone 4S with OS 7, and there appears to be a glitch which I cannot fix. There was a nice little volume control volume symbol in the bottom right-hand corner, and it would, you know, when I did driving directions, it would tell me, Siri would tell me the driving directions. Well, I thought to myself, well, what does that do? So I pushed on it, and it disappeared, and now I can't get Siri back, and I went into Siri in settings and changed the volumes and everything else, and I still can't get Siri back to give me on the maps thing.
I know I did it on mine just the other day.
Well, I think you're looking in the wrong place.
Well, you have to start directions. So once you get a map, you have to hit the directions button to start your actual directions.
Yep.
And then you should get that icon.
Well, right now I just hit resume, and it's got 100 feet turn right onto Pearl Street from Boardman and et cetera, but there's no Siri giving me directions. So I went into maps in settings, and I went to volume and changed the volume for Siri, and that's again in maps.
Yeah, the bottom right corner is your speaker volume.
Right, except it's not there anymore.
Because that lets you change the volume of Siri while she's talking to you.
Well, I tapped it once and it disappeared, and I don't have Siri anymore.
Yeah, Steve just did it too.
I'm trying to find out a way to make it go away.
Oh.
I even rebooted iPhone 4S, and it didn't help.
Huh. So that I would say, let me check my system. I would say that's a feature that you can't remove. So the fact that it's gone is interesting. So let's see. If we go to settings and then maps, you can change the volume in settings.
Right. I'm looking at that right now.
So you can
now.
Go. Well, is it set to no voice? Maybe that's why you're not getting.
No, it's on loud.
It's on loud.
I change it to no. But then when I look online, there's and it says to go to maps and settings for the voice. There should be a done at the right hand side at the top, but there's no done after I change these settings. I don't know if that's important.
Well, you're not changing the voice settings. You're changing the map settings.
Yeah, well, I shut off always in English, turn it back on, I put it to low volume, no volume, you know, anything I change, it doesn't seem to make a difference when I go back to maps, and then, you know, I've cleared out maps, started from the beginning again, set my driving directions, and...
Have you accidentally zoomed in on your screen? If you've magnified the screen, then the icon may be off the bottom of the screen.
Well, I've got...
Where's that zoom control? That's also in accessibility options somewhere, where you can zoom in on your screen.
I did magnify the screen when I first got the phone.
Can you
pinch
it?
I've got the arrow, the 3D,
no,
the
three,
square with the up pointing arrow, and the circle with the eye at the bottom, but
accessibility.
Nothing else. So...
Zoom. Yeah, go into settings, general, accessibility, zoom, and make sure zoom is turned off.
Okay.
It's double tap with three fingers to zoom in and out.
Okay. After I turn zoom off?
Well, if you turn zoom off, then you should see the entire screen. Including that bottom part where they are. Yeah, are you getting the rest of the icons at the bottom? There should be a 3D icon on the left, a list icon in the middle, and then the volume icon on the right. So if you're not seeing any of them, my guess is that you've just zoomed in on the screen and you can't get to that bottom
window. No, I've got the rest of them. I've got everything except the volume.
But only the volume icon is missing.
I've got the arrow, the 3D, the square with the arrow pointing up, and the eye with the circle.
Yeah, it's a little different on my iPad. I've only got the two buttons.
Right.
Plus the volume. But yeah, make sure Zoom is turned off so you are seeing the entire screen.
Okay, accessibility. Well, okay, I gather we're not going to get this resolved. Accessibility.
But I don't see an option to turn that icon off, so that makes me confused about how it would have disappeared.
Zoom is off.
Okay, so it's not that.
Speaker, larger type on, bold text is on. And on-off labels is on, and that's about the only thing.
Well, I am seeing other people with the same problem. In the Apple support communities, it seems that Apple has not deigned to weigh in on this issue.
Apple doesn't do anything in the support communities. That's all user support.
Okay. So I gather I'm going to have to do a reset. And maybe, can I do a reset without getting rid of all my other stuff?
There are several resets you can do, yes. You can reset just your network settings. You can reset your settings, period, so all of the settings, and then there's an erase everything and reset everything. So you have three different reset options you can try. And one of those may work as well. Or if someone on the line knows a fix for that, Todd, if you're listening, no,
all right.
we know some iOS app developers. They may have some behind the scenes knowledge that might help.
Okay, but again, the one I'm going to want to do without getting rid of my data is which one?
There's two of them you can do. You can reset your network settings or reset all your settings. What you don't want to do is erase all content.
Okay.
Until that may be the last resort. Make sure you have it backed up and then erase all the content.
Now, okay, when I back up to the iCloud now, I've got, I don't know, 10 photographs or something. How do I know if the photographs are backing up to the iCloud also?
Everything backs up to iCloud, but you can check in the iCloud setting when your last backup was.
Okay.
So in settings under iCloud, under storage and backup, it will tell you when your last backup was.
But can he go see it somewhere?
No. You can only see that the space is being used.
So if you log into iCloud.com...
You don't see your backup, no. Oh. If you back up to your computer, you can see the backup files in the computer.
Okay.
All right, how do I back up to my computer?
Tell iTunes to back up. Plug your device into the computer, in iTunes there's a backup to computer option.
Okay. Well, I guess we're going to leave it at that then. Thank you very much. Hopefully
you might, Dennis, also want to take a look at Google Maps, which I don't think you can turn off the sound on that at all. So if you really need maps,
see, that's what's confusing,
and you need
is
the
you
voice.
You can't turn this feature off, as near as I can tell.
Right. Well,
Is Siri herself turned off?
No. I asked Siri. I went to Siri and said, turn on Siri in Maps, and she just said, you're at... She gave my current location.
All right.
That's all she said.
So Siri, Siri herself is on. So.
But if you need maps that talk to you until Apple solves this problem, because clearly there are other people who are having it because I can see it in the forums, you might want to try at least Google Maps.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
At least you have something.
Yes.
Right.
All right, thank you, guys.
Yep, thank you. Yeah, it's Apple has had problems with their Maps product. It's certainly getting much better, but until it's right, if you're one of the people having the I suppose maybe could he if he deletes his preferences though, he deletes like home and all the places he saved and everything else, right?
I don't know if that's saved under settings or not. But that's part of your contacts. So it looks in your contacts database for addresses for directions. So that shouldn't be deleted by hitting the reset. But that's interesting. I don't see any way to remove that icon manually.
Well, that's why I'm saying it's an issue rather than
the OS.
Right.
I have seen a 7.05 beta update being talked about. So maybe we'll get.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a fix coming down the pike, so to speak. All right, our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's up?
I had some questions, three about the Security Tango, and then another one about some other security software.
Okay.
We were talking earlier about acronyms, and when I ran Super Anti-Spyware, the results gave back that it found two PUPs, P-U-P-S, that were in the registry. I zapped them, of course, but I forgot, what does PUP stand for?
P-U-P-S, right?
Yes.
Potentially undesirable programs.
Oh, okay.
Or unwanted programs.
Undesirable or unwanted, right. And basically what that means is we're not really certain this is a bad program, but we're pretty sure it's not a good program, so you may potentially want to remove this.
I heard a good term for that. Doucheware.
Very charming.
It's technically not a virus, but it's not really that good either.
Right. It's potentially unwanted programs, and generally what it means is, as I said, we're pretty sure we know it's not entirely on the virus list or whatever, but we're pretty sure you don't want it.
Oh, well, I did get rid of it.
There you go.
Obtrusive right. advertising
one,
and
another
ad
one that
insertions.
Came up was Scareware. And the name of the program was PC Backup. My guess is it's something my wife downloaded.
Yep. Scareware is, you've got a problem with your computer. Oh, my God, it's going to explode any minute now.
Send us a check for money.
To load up
The FBI is going to come
program.
And arrest you.
Right.
So send us a money order from Western Union.
$19.95 or whatever. Yeah, that's exactly what it does. And so, needless to say, you're not infected. Your machine's not going to blow up. The Mayans are not going to end the world tomorrow if you don't send in that check.
And the problem is there is a legitimate company called MyPC Backup.
Yes, I've seen
And so
that
the bad guys will either have a very similar name, or sometimes they just take the whole name of a real company to help them trick you into turning over your money.
Where he should send a check is here at Jazz 90.1 and become a member of somebody.
Yeah,
no, of course he should.
I am, but I will again when you have another fund drive.
Yep.
The other
you don't have to wait. You can do it. You can do it online, safely online at Jazz 901.org. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, that's all right. The other one is, I think it was from Super Anti-Spyware that there was some tracking. I forgot the other
tracking
word
cookie
they used, and I think I know what it means. But there, I always get several of those. Sometimes 30 of them.
Sure,
hundreds is common.
They come from the sites you go to. Right. Everybody wants to track you nowadays because that's how they make money from their advertisers.
Right.
Most of the time. That's fairly harmless.
Yeah.
People don't like to be tracked, but they're not really tracking you. They're tracking the trends that are coming off your computer. They don't actually relate them. Mostly, they don't relate them directly back to Gary from Rochester.
Right.
They just say, in aggregate, people who go here also go here.
Right.
And there have been some interesting tests. Studies. EFF has one they call Panopticlick. There is a function called cookies in your browser that was designed for this type of stuff. And it lets advertisers see what websites you've been to because it displays an ad from that site. And since now there are so few advertisers, DoubleClick is one of the biggest advertisers, so they have so many ads on so many sites, they can essentially track you by the ads that have displayed. A lot of people are turning their cookies off to limit their tracking. But cookies aren't necessary for tracking. Virtually every computer has a unique browser based on the fonts you have installed, based on the screen size of your web window. And so this Panopticlick test from the FF will basically tell you how trackable you are. So my browser is unique among the 4 million browsers they've tested based on other things besides the cookies that are in my machine.
Okie doke. Thanks. We have to take a quick break.
Hey, thank you.
Yep, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites right here on the Truly Great and Truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Steve from Greece, New York on the line. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, guys. I have a Windows 7 laptop that's over the last, I guess it was a month ago. I get two pop-ups when I after I log in and it boots up. First one is a Run DLL pop-up. It says there was a problem starting, and I can give you the whole list, but basically it's Microsoft.kbeacon DLL.
It's Microsoft what?
/user/steve/appdata/local/diagnostic/microsoft/kbeacon.dll. And then the specified module could not be found. And the other pop-up I suddenly get is a RegSVR32 pop-up.
Mm-hmm.
Says the module C, user, Steve, app data, local, looks like WNNICS/CNBJ0T7F.DLL failed to load.
All right. Now, where are you going to find these? Most of these get loaded in the startup menu. If you were to go down, what version of Windows? Windows 7?
Yes.
All right, if you go down in the lower left-hand corner and you click on the start bar, you're going to see a little window there where you could type something in.
Right.
And if you type in msconfig, that's all one word, msconfig, hit enter, it's going to bring up this little menu. One of the menu options is startup. And if you go to the far right of it, you will see, you know, those long extensions, and they're tied to a particular program that's trying to start up.
I would be worried that such a random series of characters, .dll, is malware.
Could be, but like I say, he's going to find it in the startup program where it's trying to execute itself.
What antivirus program are you running?
I'm running Defender.
Windows Defender?
Right, and I've danced the tango a couple times.
It might have gotten rid of it, but there's still the remnants in the startup. So what you're going to have to do is go down that startup list. You'll see the whole list of programs down there. And quite often, you could tell, the average user can tell whether they want this particular program running or they don't.
Right.
Yeah.
And the good news is it's clearly they're not running.
Right.
So I think Dave is right. You cleaned them, but it didn't get rid of the startup menu item.
And the other good thing, though, is you can't do any damage by unchecking a particular program
started. Depending on what it is.
Well, I mean in the startup menu. In the startup menu, there's not too many things there that are going to, you know, wreak havoc from your system.
Especially using msconfig. That usually won't.
You're not going in anywhere. It's dangerous. That's why I say if he sticks to msconfig, it's usually programs that are what we call TSRs, terminate and stay resident. And by going in there, you're less likely to do any serious damage to your machine. And if it turns off a feature, you can always go back into msconfig and check it and have it restart.
And you might want to switch to a better antivirus program. We had several customers this week that were using Microsoft Defender and Security Essentials, and they got the ZBot Trojan snuck through.
Yep.
And they used to be a lot better than they are now. And you'd think Microsoft could make the best antivirus for their own OS.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. So. It's only a part-time job, and that's been one of our biggest complaints with Microsoft.
Yeah.
Again, they want to do everything to the whole world. You know, they want to be the more or less, I think they're envious now of Google and how much Google is doing.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to be part of Google, you know, the Google service, the mail, and all this other stuff. But guess what? Google has stayed out of trying to do antivirus software or malware software. They know that's not their business, and they stay away from it. Microsoft should follow along suit.
Are you talking AVG or Avast?
AVG, Avast are both great ones. They're free. I love Avast. I've had Avast for quite a few
especially
years
now.
Especially
that voice that tells you that your antivirus has been updated.
Yes. It's scary, though, in the middle
o'clock
of
in the morning.
Because I can have a totally quiet house, and if I forgot to turn down the speakers.
And you were the only one in the house.
I'm the only one in the
house. You and a couple of dogs.
And I hear this voice coming from downstairs. It's like, wait a minute, grab the gun. Yep. Who's in the house?
Or when the girlfriend hears that that sexy female voice coming out of the other room.
Yeah, right. Who are you with?
Who's
Jake,
that?
It's Jake from State Farm.
Jake, what are you wearing?
Khakis.
Love that commercial.
Okay. Yep.
She's a guy,
really
so.
I don't really have to worry about these because they're obviously not starting.
Well, except it's annoying. So as Steve said, as Dave said, go into MSConfig, and if you can find them, turn them off.
Right. I guess I was worried about the one that was diagnostic / Microsoft.
Yeah, no. Like I said, just go to the startup menu and try that.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You're the best.
Thanks. Have fun.
Yep.
Did you hear the Google news this week? A couple weeks ago, Google sold Motorola.
Yep.
They bought it for $12 billion. They sold it for $3 billion to Lenovo. Now they bought, what was it, a $5 billion stake in Lenovo?
Yep.
So what in the world is Google doing?
Everything, all the right moves, we think. They wanted Motorola for were the 17,000 patents. Because now it's going to be a whole lot harder for another company to sue them for their phone for Android operating system.
Joy of Tech had a cute cartoon on it. The garage sale. Lenovo looking at, here's all the stuff we're selling.
Right, where are the patents? Yeah. And that's fine. But now that Lenovo owns Motorola, Google... The other part of the problem was that all the other Android handset makers were very upset with Google because now they thought Motorola was going to get preferential treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're now one removed from Motorola now.
Again,
Lenovo owns that.
Yeah.
So they have a stake in it, but not enough of a stake to make Samsung and all the other manufacturers angry. Did you hear
the
Wozniak?
No. Oh, no, the other one, yeah.
Today? This week said Apple's big mistake is they never put out an Android phone, and they should.
Yeah. So a lot of the Mac blogs were saying, here's five other impossible things Apple will never do.
Right.
But back to the Olympics, Samsung is a huge sponsor and technology partner for the Olympics. So there were a lot of stories coming out earlier this week that whenever the athletes and the newscasters pulled out their eye devices, they were told they had to cover the logo up.
Yes.
And after they got all that bad press, the IOC comes out and says, no, they don't have to do that. So Samsung is a huge sponsor, and everyone's using eye devices.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Tawaga.
Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Well, you were talking earlier about identifying people without cookies simply because of all kinds of arcane fingerprinting techniques like fonts and such like that.
Right.
I was wondering if that could be counteracted by using something like Privoxy, because I've seen that before. I never bothered to really look into how to use that.
You mean any one of the places that puts an extra layer between you and where you're going?
Well, Privoxy is, well, it's probably very similar. Privoxy is a software that you can install as a web proxy, you know, much like Squid or one of those.
Right. Yes and no. If you don't want anybody tracking you, most companies don't track you, like I said. They track Gary from Rochester, Joe from Cheektowaga. They don't track those. They track the statistics of X number of people went from this site to that site. They looked at these ads during the same time that they were going to this site. That sort of fare. So going through a proxy doesn't change that in any way, shape, or form. Because they're not looking at it from your end. They don't care about your end. They want the statistics of 700 people clicked on this link when they went to this website.
They're not really tracking people specifically necessarily.
Right. Mostly they're not. Because honestly, Joe, who are you? Who cares about you? What they care about... No, I'm serious, and I don't mean to be rude, but they don't care. What they care about is the aggregate, the mob. Selling one thing to you means nothing to them. Setting it up so that they can sell a million things to the mob is exactly what they want to do. So they don't care that Joe from Cheektowaga clicked on an auto ad when he went to some website. What they care about is 17,000 people. Well, what they care about is 43% of people clicked on the second ad down on the right when they went to that website. Because that's how they make their predictions and ultimately how they make their money. Nobody cares about us as individuals. They truly, truly don't. What they care about is the aggregate information.
Well, that's okay. Being the last of five children, I'm used to being a nobody.
the worry, and what a lot of the Snowden documents have increased the worry of, is police phishing expeditions. That you get arrested for some crime, and oh, let's go look at your browser history and your cell phone history and see, yeah, you downloaded this movie illegally. We can add that to the list of charges.
Right, and that's separate. That has nothing to do with tracking where you go online because they're not tracking you.
Yeah.
That is, we're now looking at Joe from Cheektowaga specifically, so let's go look at everything he's done.
Right.
It's an entirely separate issue.
And your ISP knows that anyway.
Right, right. The fact that you have to go through anybody else to get wherever you want to go on the internet means everybody knows your business.
And even if you use a VPN service to hide your end, whoever your VPN service is, it comes out of the internet from them, and they know where you're going, and they could be subpoenaed.
That's
or
exactly
their
right.
ISP is being asked.
That's exactly right.
Mm. What do you think of the do not track header? I kind of figure it's kind of worthless because the websites are going to do what the websites are going to do no matter what you send them.
I believe, quite honestly, that people have made an amazing amount of money selling placebos since the Middle Ages.
Yep. And even if websites honor... Yeah, even if websites honor do not track, the advertisers will figure out a different way to track you.
Well, no, because here's the thing. I believe most websites do honor do not track. That's not where the problem is. The problem is at the 15 connections you went through to get to that website. The website may not track you, but all of those 15 places are keeping the data of you going through them. Where is this address going? Again, not for that address, but for the place it's going to. 60,000 people in Rochester, New York went to read the obituaries of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Ah.
Right? That's the thing that's important to them. So if I want to, well, that's a one-off event, so that's not a good idea. But a brand new car dealership opens in Rochester. 200,000 people went and looked at their website. Okay. Now, in this block of addresses that all are in Rochester, New York, I'm going to start showing more car ads.
Holy crap,
yeah,
look at the news.
That's kind of interesting for me because I have a you know, an IP version 6 tunnel with Hurricane Electric, a lot of the sites seem to think I'm in Chicago. No, that's just where my tunnel exits.
Right. But the point is that they're still tracking that information.
So you're skewing the tracking data and you're getting incorrect information.
No, you're not, because out of 60,000 people, he's one guy.
Yeah. So you're going to get ads for Chicago pizza restaurants and not Ratchet.
Right. That's exactly how that's going to work. And you're going to find that when you go to certain places, if they've got the time displayed, it's an hour off because they're displaying Chicago time. It's those little things.
Oh, yeah. Central.
Right. Yeah. So it's those little things that will be different. But the fact that this ad was successful or this ad was never clicked on will not change, which is all they care about at the other end.
One thing I'd like to add before the break.
Yeah.
I noticed this week that IP version 6 native connectivity was turned on in the Buffalo area for Time Warner Cable.
Yay!
Now I got to figure out all sorts of firewalling rules and all that, because, well, the one thing we should tell listeners when that does come, IP version 6 basically restores end-to-end connectivity. You're no longer behind a NATing firewall, so firewalling becomes all that more important because it's not automatic anymore.
Right, exactly. All right, thanks, Joe. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, before we get back to the phones, I should read a little bit about this news story because...
Coming up at Apple Cider Meeting this week, it's the second Wednesday of the month, we're going to have Phil Plait, that was another story we're doing, Phil Dampier from StopTheCap.com talking about cutting the cable TV cord and getting your media from the internet and a lot of other internet-type issues. We're also going to have Rick Harrison showing off the Raspberry Pi, and is it a threat to general-purpose computers? And we're going to also be doing fitness activity tracking, like the Fitbit and some of the other fitness things.
That alone is going to be huge in iOS 8.
iOS 8 and the iWatch might be doing that as well. That's this Wednesday.
All the Mac people will be going on diets now.
This Wednesday, February 12th at 7 p.m. at East High School. And you can find more information at applecider.org.
And rather than read this whole thing, I will quickly summarize it. As you may know, there was a net neutrality law that said everybody gets treated equally in terms of traffic on the internet. So Verizon can't stop AT&T traffic. MCI can't, which if it still existed, can't stop Sprint traffic, et cetera, et cetera. That was overturned by our beloved government. And so now we are finding that a lot of companies are beginning to throttle. For example, there was a fellow who from a company called iScan Online, which deals with this and handles it, believed that he was being throttled by Verizon. Verizon, he believed, was throttling Netflix to slow it down so that people would get frustrated with it and move to Verizon's Fios to Verizon's own service, cable service, and that they were doing the same thing for Amazon AWS, which also supports Netflix and a bunch of other stuff. So he says he noticed a similar slowdown at home and that Netflix in the evenings had recently been severely degraded. Raphael quickly connected the dots, realized both locations used Verizon Fios for internet access, so he ran some tests. I won't go through the tests, but he contacted, in proper use of the word contact, Verizon customer care via chat, in an effort to see what the problem might be. After pressing the representative for more than 30 minutes, Raphael apparently got him to admit that Verizon is throttling service to Amazon AWS, Amazon Web Services, and other cloud service providers. Frankly, I was surprised he admitted to this, Raphael wrote. I've since tested this almost every day for the last couple of weeks. During the day, the bandwidth is normal to AWS. However, after 4 p.m. or so, things get really slow. And so if you want to know more about that and what you can do about it and how that all works, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, Apple Cider. 7 o'clock?
Yes.
7 o'clock, Apple Cider. And you can read about it at Apple, what is it?
Stop Apple, the Cap.
AppleCider.org.
AppleCider.org for the meeting, yep.
And StopTheCap.com for the actual stuff. Phil's been running Stop the Cap and doing yeoman service for a very long time, and it's a great job. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Guys, last weekend I had a phone call from a woman with a very heavy Indian accent saying that she was from Windows Security, that my computer had some, it was hard to understand her, but had some action going on or something. And she made me go to the event viewer and told her I had like 15,000 events. And then she said, oh, my God, something is wrong. We got to take care of it. And wanted me to go to TeamViewer, at which point I cut her off.
Yeah. The other one they tell you to do is look for an INF file because that means you're infected.
Yeah.
No, that's an initialization file.
Right, I understand that. And have you heard of this?
Oh, yeah. This is big. It's everywhere. What she was leading up to was taking control of your machine, which would prove you had a virus because she just put it there, and then she would charge you several hundred dollars to remove it.
And they're using a legitimate program. TeamViewer is a legitimate remote control program that real tech support people use.
Right. I have TeamViewer on my computer, and I use it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, now that LogMe and Free's been discontinued, a lot of people have shifted to TeamViewer.
Yep. Please, everyone, please listen to my next sentence very, very carefully. No one at Microsoft will ever call you directly. Let me repeat. No one at Microsoft will ever call you directly. There is no division called Windows Security that calls people at home. There is no Bill Gates will not call you. He will not send you a check for forwarding mails. None of that is true.
We're even seeing Apple users get targeted, and they'll say they're from Apple Security doing the same thing.
Apple is the same thing. They are not going to call you.
Yeah. What we think it is, because these people have the talk down, we think they are real tech support people in their off hours. Hopefully not on their
earning
own.
Earning
a little extra money going through the logs, yeah.
Perhaps ex-tech support
ex-tech,
people.
Yeah. That's,
let's at least put that on them, you know?
Yeah. And that goes along with the earlier caller about the scareware. They're scaring you into thinking there's a problem, and you'll pay them money to fix it.
Right. That's exactly right. Well, see, you were smart, Joe. You hung up on her.
Yeah, I just want to do, I haven't been listening to the program the last couple of weeks, so I wanted to make you guys aware of it and let the your listening audience aware of it as well.
I appreciate that, Joe. Thanks.
Yeah, all right, you guys have a good day.
You too.
Yeah, the FCC has, and the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, has a website set up on telemarketing scams, and you can report it to them and give them the call ID phone number that came in so that they can investigate it and try to stop it. Part of the problem is that often is overseas, and so it's hard from a jurisdictional standpoint on how.
Yeah, you're not going to find them.
Yeah,
yeah. I've got a couple of different things. I have to redo my my answering machine message because it used to start with those three tones that indicated the line was out of service. Do do do. Right, and if it did that, and you got a robocall, the robocaller would hang up and take you out of the list. Because they don't want to waste time on on dialing numbers that don't exist anymore.
Right.
So I've got to put that back in. But the other thing is, if it comes up blocked or unknown number, I don't answer it.
True.
And if they don't, if they don't leave a message, it wasn't important.
Right. And if they do leave a message, now I can determine whether that is somebody I want to add to my contact list so that I will know who it is next time, or I just delete it and I don't ever see it again. And you know, I'm as I get older, I did not realize it was possible, but I am also getting more curmudgeonlier.
Yeah.
And so I don't care anymore. If you, if I don't know you, I'm sure that you're a wonderful human being and a credit to your parents, but I don't need to talk to you until I know who you are. I don't answer the phone for unknown number.
The other big problem we're seeing, and Bing is a big cause of it in Windows, is people will call for help. And so you go to Bing and Google, you know, search for Microsoft support. The first six links it finds are not Microsoft.
Right.
And you have to notice that little yellow background, that it's an ad. And so they'll call this company. We've had it happen with Microsoft and Apple. They'll call the company and ask for help. And the company will say, okay, we can help you, and we'll set up a remote control, and it's going to be $300.
Right.
And so they trick you into to paying money for their remote control service, which it's again, it's a legitimate service, but they're being jerks about it. So a lot of people have been caught by that, especially if your computer is still under warranty. They're not going to charge you a fee if your computer is under warranty for a telephone call.
Right, right. So be very careful who you talk to on the phone. Be very careful who you answer. And any time somebody says, well, why don't we set up a thing that I can get into your computer with, if you don't know them really, really well, I personally would never do that. Never, ever do that. Call somebody you do know and have them check it out for you. That's a much better deal. Or get a Chromebook, and then you can't install TeamViewer because yep. And the systems don't have problems quite the same way. And so
and
you won't have that issue.
If it gets infected, it's easy to erase. And
so far,
because all your data,
there are no infections because there are no vectors.
Yeah.
There's no hooks into anything because there's almost nothing you can hook into.
Yeah. And all your data is at Chrome, so at Google, so there's nothing on the computer anyway.
Right. And Google has offered, what, $2.7 million to anybody who can infect?
It was Pi Million.
No, it's, yeah, no. Oh, yeah, 3. Man,
3.14 million, yeah.
But it was a bucket load of cash to anybody who could actually infect a Chromebook. So far, nobody has claimed it. So, all right, that music tells me we're past done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank everybody who called in. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't hang up, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow as much as anyone can. I mean, George is a wild. You don't. Anyway, we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of Sound Bites right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.